This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I did the war report this morning. I'm fucking excited. I'm hyped. The show did not turn me down. It's AB. I'm in the building. I'm also joined by Mike. What's up, Mike? Are you hyped?
You know, I am hyped. I am... Pro wrestling has never been more back as Sting with slightly insane icon face paint being one of the best like wrestlers over the age of 50 ever tonight. Like, and that was like a match we weren't expecting a lot out of. Like, pro wrestling is so back right now. And, you know, we had the war report in the morning. I don't know what we should call this, but feels like everyone was at battle stations tonight.
That's right. We're also joined by our fellow soldier, Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. What's up, Nate?
I'm not a soldier, actually. I'm a pacifist. But I am here. I'm at my battle station, but I'm just like the helmsman or the commsman. I'm your, you know, your Sulu or your Chekhov. You guys got the whole photons and phasers unlocked.
Nate, I appreciate your pacifism, but in the AEW versus WWE war, there can be no bystanders. To be neutral in the face of WWE is to side with WWE.
Yeah, I won't dispute that. I mean, you know, I've long said, I think I said on the first episode of this show, you know, my rooting interest in wrestling is not for any wrestler. It's not for any promotion. It's not for any promoter. Not for any cable channel. It's not for any ownership group. It's just for the death of WWE and the physical death of Vince McMahon. So, yes, in that regard, I do have a alliance of convenience with AEW. And, you know, big W for them in that battle.
Absolutely. A huge W tonight. I'm just going to get the plugs out.
Would you call it a nuclear W?
I would call it a nuclear W for the good guys. We like to post the W banner over at Everything AEW. Please follow us over there. You can find me at Aaron Like the Car, Nate's at Epitasis, Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. You just search Everything Elite on the podcast app of your choice and hit subscribe. It's good for us and it gets you all the episodes very quickly. If you use the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and review. If you want to support the show, the best way to do so is to go to patreon.com/everythingelite. We're breaking records over there. Another big month at the Patreon. So join all the cool kids at the Everything Elite Patreon. We're going to kick off the show with Elite or Delete. If you're a new listener, because, you know, you're just bowled over by all the momentum that AEW has, you're joining us for the first time. We like to use this segment to say the best parts and the worst parts of Dynamite. We'd like to start with the best parts because this is a positive. This is a... This is not always a positive podcast, but it's positive when it's good, like it was tonight. Nate kicks us off, always. So
partisan?
Tell us,
this is a... Were you going to say partisan?
Well, that'd be good. I mean... It is. I mean, I think that's fair. We just said at the top of the show, we're rooting for WWE to die. But right. We go very hard on AEW when we don't like things.
Right. Yes, that's true. If you're new to the show, yeah, we are broadly rooting for a diversification of the Major League Pro Wrestling market in the United States. But yeah, we do are often critical enough of AEW that we're called, you know, haters or whatever else. So that's you're in for.
Yes, that is. So we're going to start it out with some positive vibes. I'd say there'll be a lot of positive vibes on this show. So Nate, hit us up with what was your favorite part of the show, your elite pick.
Well, fellas, I'm going to make it easy for us. I don't know if you know, there was a pretty big match that was advertised for this show. It had, you know, two generational talents, two of the best pro wrestlers of the last, what do you say? You don't, instead of a quarter century, what if you say 20 years instead of 25 years?
Generation.
How do you do that? No. Like, you know, a percentile, not a quarter, not a third, but a fifth. A fifth? A fifth?
It's a fifth. A fifth,
century? Fifth of a century? A
quintile.
That doesn't. A quintile? Mm. I like quintile better. Don't know if it's, you know, in the common parlance.
No.
But I'll take it.
No.
For the last quintile century, two of the best wrestlers.
I don't think that works now that you said that out loud.
No, now I'm doubling down on it. Quintile century. And hey, these guys went out there, first match on the show, in the biggest building that AEW has run, in front of the biggest crowd that AEW has run in front of. And they delivered like a great stadium big show match. These guys went out and worked it like they were working a WrestleMania main event or a Tokyo Dome main event. And the crowd totally carried the match through the first, you know, couple movements where they're laying the groundwork and doing your sort of typical technical wrestling stuff and, you know, sizing each other up and so on and so forth. Crowd totally carried it with the atmosphere through all of that. So, you know, you were riveted throughout all those moments that can be slow when you're in front of like a clap crowd or whatever. And then you got into the meat of the match and, you know, a couple pretty good pro wrestlers here that did some pretty cool moves. Even the stuff where, you know, you like go up on the ramp and you do a couple of spots there. That felt like going up on the ramp of a Wrestle Kingdom main event or something. You would see that exact kind of thing. And it just peaked super high. They got into the finishing sequence and crowd was absolutely losing their mind. I could use a delete on this, but I won't. One of the worst 1 minute remaining calls in pro wrestling history by Justin Roberts. He's never good at the time calls, but this is especially bad. I think that might be a problem of like their audio setup in general, that you almost always get Justin Roberts saying that and being drowned out by the commentary. But nonetheless, I do think the crowd kind of, when that came around, smartened up and went, I think it's going to a draw. And you did get a big boo, but can't really, you know, I didn't know if they were going to do a draw. I thought maybe they'd be, you know, too scared to do it because they haven't done a lot of draws lately. But I can't argue with that as a logical and effective sort of storytelling device to push this feud on and make it about the title next time, whatever they're going to do. So I'll give them credit for, you know, having the balls to do it, I suppose. But just a great fucking pro wrestling match.
Yeah, no, this is the result of, I feel like, everyone who's ever done any sort of fan booking game, wrestling management game, where you ultimately want to try to get two wrestlers like Kenny Omega and Brian Danielson in your promotion to have like a big match, and you don't want to give away the big match early, so you have them go out there and just work an incredible 30-minute time limit draw and leave work it in such a way that I didn't necessarily got the big WrestleMania Wrestle Kingdom vibe from this. Like, I felt like that this was, if anything, like the start of a feud rather than how I kind of view those WrestleMania and Wrestle Kingdom matches as a conclusion or like a big moment there. Like, this felt like the opening act with these two, and I really enjoyed it for that. I thought that it did have that aura of it feeling super special, and with the way that they set up, of course, Arthur Ashe Stadium, they brought back the LED ramp from Revolution in 2020, which was really kind of cool. And it's just something like going out there on national TV and just having a technical brawly, just a whole lot of everything kind of match. I mean, Brian Danielson did a Poison Rana in this match, and it just like, and it's something you're like, okay, now we are really kind of just doing what we're feeling like doing, and it comes off just excellently. And then, you know, the angle post match, I felt like that it was exactly like the next step in this overall kind of feud or storyline, and I think it was just an unmitigated success, even from like the playing with the expectation of, oh, you can go to a time limit draw, this is the main event because it'd be TV time remaining. No, we're leading off with this and we're giving a full quarter of our show to this one match. Just I thought they were going to do this, and it came off even better than I expected.
I think the big takeaway for me was just like, oh, Danielson is going to be exactly what we hoped he would be. He can do all the stuff we want him to do. I didn't have really a concern that he was washed, but the guy is old and he's been doing WWE style for so long. You just don't know if a guy can come out of the gates and do something else. I mean, he just gave an interview today where he was like, oh, I saw Cody do a move in a match with Pentagon, and I thought, I can't do that. And then he realized, you know, he probably could do that. But you wonder if you would see that working itself out in the ring of like, oh, wait, you know, I'm not able yet to do these things that I want to do. And I'm sure we're going to see more from him, but he worked like a classic style match. He took crazy bumps. I hope got all that out of the way of people saying like, oh, no, he's bumping on his neck and head. Because he's going to do it in every match. So just if you don't like it, you're just going to have to not watch his matches because that's what's going to happen. So no big deal there. But it was great. The crowd was insane. Danielson was clearly like, I mean, not overwhelmed with emotion, but very emotional at the beginning, just seeing everyone excited for him. And that was nice. I don't know. You couldn't really improve this. I mean, it was exactly what you wanted it to be.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, you know, when I say that they worked it like a WrestleMania, Wrestle Kingdom match, I guess I just kind of mean the pace and, you know, doing a bunch of big spots, but letting those big spots breathe, you know, letting the reaction to the crowd. I'll do an example is like when Danielson goes to do the spot in the corner where he does the chop and then he does the kick, he really lets those breathe, right? Like he does a chop and he waits until the last woo dies down and then he does a kick. So that's kind of how I meant, but yeah, so we kind of worked that kind of style match, but totally escalated the level of the, you know, crazy spots that he's going to do. And in that way, it was, you know, he's kind of meeting like a Kenny Omega Wrestle Kingdom match, an Okada match, doing fucking, you know, he didn't land on his head, but doing like a tiger suplex off the top turnbuckle. I doubt they would have let him do that in WWE. So really split that difference very nicely, I think. The other aspect of it that I especially liked in terms of giving us what we want, Danielson, like, comes out and is just like, no, I'm going to do the I have till five spot. I'm going to do it as big as possible. I'm going to do the cattle mutilation spot. People are going to lose their minds. So that's kind of the funny meta thing of like, oh, yeah, no, I'm telling you guys, this is not Daniel Bryan. This is American Dragon Bryan Danielson. And I think he did just enough of that where it wasn't, you know, corny, wasn't over the top or whatever. But it was just enough to be like, no, now I'm doing what I want to do. And now I'm here to give people what they want to see.
It's also interesting in the story. I know Mike and I got to talk about that this morning on Light, our Dynamite preview show that we do on the Patreon. But I'm interested in your thoughts, Nate, of, you know, where's this going next? What's the full gear match? Obviously, there's a rematch coming because, you know, they did a draw. I thought it was interesting. I thought Joe Lanza made a good point of like, it seemed like Omega was getting the best of Danielson in the match. And Joe pointed out he thought that was the story, you know, that Danielson wasn't quite good enough for the AEW World Champion. But the way that it, you know, when it ends in a draw, and the story that they tell on commentary is that if the match had gone a little bit longer, Danielson would have won the match. So I'm not going to say I was confused, but it felt like they were more trying to tell us, despite some of the in-ring story, that these guys are on a more even footing than you might have expected.
Yeah, I think, I don't think that was an incorrect interpretation by Joe, but, and this might also be an element of me having the Fight TV feed and seeing through the ad break. But what it really read like to me is the story that they were telling is exactly what you talked about with the head drops and head bumps and neck bumps and all this stuff, which is, oh, he hasn't been taking bumps like this or whatever. He's been, you know, protected in WWE and can't, you know, work at full throttle or whatever it is. And now Kenny Omega's dropped him on his head with this dragon suplex. And now Kenny Omega's done this running V-Trigger down the ramp. It looked absolutely awesome. And then they did this tease through the whole commercial break, which is really a brilliant way to lay out the match, I think, where Danielson basically was doing a count-out tease and then went to stand up and get back in the ring and just collapse. And it's like, oh, shit, this guy's having a, you know, concussion seizure like he tends to do. And then, you know, by the time they got back out of the ad break, it's like, oh, Kenny's bringing him back in the ring now or whatever, or Danielson makes the next count after Kenny interrupted the count. But that's what I think the story of that first part of the match really was, oh, Danielson has to find his footing here because he's not used to getting his head rocked like this. And by the way, he's had a history of bad brain. And then, yeah, as it got into the end of the match, they definitely accented that point, and Excalibur said it explicitly so that we wouldn't miss it at all, that, oh, if the match had gone another minute, Bryan Danielson probably would have won. So, yeah, I think that's a great way to continue to play a sort of 50-50 between these guys. As for where it's going next, I don't know. I kind of thought, I convinced myself that they were going to do what I wanted them to do, which is just have Kenny Omega beat him. And then the story that I would have done is, oh, it, you know, not the exact same story, but similar idea to what we saw Britt Baker do, where it's, oh, I'm going to start and I'm going to get my record up and I'm going to go through and I'm going to win and I'm going to beat all these people and just start racking those wins. And then we get fucking all these great Bryan Danielson matches where he has to go through every other guy on the roster, right? And we can see what all those matches look like. He would probably wrestle on Dark just for the hell of it. And then he would finally get his record back all the way up to being number one. And then he can come back at Kenny for the belt. But now they're not doing that. So I think, I don't know. We don't know when those four TNT specials are yet. But if they're not going to do it on Full Gear, that would be another great place to do it. And they can advertise it like, hey, you know, there was a draw at 30 minutes last time. No time limit this time. You know, it's going to be the second hour of the show with no limits on the time or whatever it is. I guess that's kind of what you have to do, is whatever the next match is going to be between these guys has to either be no time limit or 60-minute time limit, right?
Yeah.
Well, the world title matches are 60-minute time limit, right?
Yeah, they're hours. I think they can still do some of that, Nate, where he has to build his way up, because they've made such a big deal in the build-up here about the AEW rankings and the win-loss record. And since this was a non-title match, now his record is 0-0-1. I mean, they still have close to 2 months, 7 weeks, that, like, knowing Danielson and what we could expect out of it, he might be just speed running through that, but I could see them just trying to build up the record so then he's able to be in the rankings. It's been such a big talking point in the lead up to the match.
But I could also imagine Omega saying, like, fuck, you know, I'm going to prove that I'm better than you. And so just, like, letting him have a title match regardless.
Well, he tweeted no rematch.
Okay.
So I get that doesn't seem to be the way they're going. But yeah, you're right. But they could for sure do that, Mike, and be like, no, I'm not giving you a rematch until, you know, you're number one in the rankings or whatever. And then, yeah, then it's like, oh, well, you know, they went to a draw last time. So this time, who knows who will win? I guess that's, you know, they're just protecting Danielson even more than I would have done, which is, you know, maybe you do a little hijinks with Don Callis otherwise, but otherwise just have Kenny Omega beat him. And then be like, hey, that was my first match. My bell got rung. I'm going to come back in 2 months or whatever it is, and we'll do it again. But hey, if they can do that fucking match again, or anything approaching that match again, or better than that match, you know, put a clean finish on the end of it, I'm going to be there. I'm going to watch that match.
Wow, really, Nate?
I mean, you know, me and matches were...
That's true.
It's kind of a love-hate thing, you know.
Is it?
Yeah, sometimes.
It's kind of a hate thing.
I mean, I love that cage match from the pay-per-view. That was a love match.
That's true. You did.
So, there you go.
All right, Mike, what was your favorite thing from the show tonight?
I think that...
I mean, obviously, all of our favorite thing was the opening match. But
right, yeah.
You have to pick something else. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a 4.75 stars match opening up a show, you're just... That's going to win. But right after that, CM Punk's promo, I have to say, like, what a just incredible 40 minutes they had of television, the first third of the show, having that match and then CM Punk's promo, and just the way that, like, seeing someone like that cook, for lack of better terms, and starting off doing like the Saturday Night Live host kind of bit of just like when he was in Cincinnati going like Minoru Suzuki, King of Prankers, like he was doing some of that in the build up there, and then
musical guest, yeah, Mikey Ruckus.
Right, yeah, so he was doing that, like he's the fill-in host, and then they pivoted towards he pivoted to be like, you all want the old mad CM Punk, you'll see him eventually, but I'm too happy right now, I'm loving this, but let me tell you about something that has pissed me off, Team Taz. And then just the way that he wove that promo, kept the crowd engaged, like in a hard spot that, like, really, you have that match, what you're going to do next, you're going to put CM Punk in the middle of the ring and tell him to cut a 10-minute promo. And then the final lines of him going on to saying, you slept on the legend of CM Punk, and it's not my job to wake you up, it's my job to tuck you in. Just tremendous promo. And, you know, it's kind of it. I think now Punk versus Hobbs is my most anticipated thing on Friday with that promo.
Pretty stacked card for Friday. So I don't know about that. I am very excited about being Powerhouse Hobbs in that match. I thought the promo is certainly a wise choice in terms of how do you follow up that main event, especially that main event with a draw finish. So you've kind of got a crowd that's both burnt out on a great match and like a little bit dissatisfied, right? Pretty much the only thing you can do is put CM Punk out there. So that worked well. I thought the promo was pretty good. It didn't blow me away, but it did. I think it was pretty much, you know, note perfect for the moment, and then built the match in a satisfactory way and kind of settled the crowd down and went, hey, there's fucking 90 minutes of this show left. So let's keep it rolling. That's about, I think, where I landed with it.
Man, I really thought it was excellent. Yes, CM Punk is the guy you got to put out there next, but that doesn't mean it's easy to just cut a promo that's going to catch the moment here and fit the emotion that needs to be there. And Punk is able to play that thing of, I'm happy to be here, and also weave in this, like, not really blood feud with Team Taz, but, you know, add a little something to it. And this thing, you know, I whoever came up with it, I assume it was Punk, but this idea of, I'm so happy to be here and they want to take that away from me, it's just like, that's an excellent story to tell. And I was already in on it because I was in on the story from the perspective of, oh, it's going to be fun to see Punk against Hobbs and against, I don't know about Starks, but, you know, whoever he can work and hook in Team Taz. But now I'm like, oh no, I'm actually invested in this story based on this promo. I just thought it was perfect.
Yeah, that did crystallize it very nicely. And he is generally one of the better people in wrestling at doing that, I think. So you're right. I agree with that.
All right. I guess that makes it my turn to choose my favorite thing from the show. And we've already picked the two best things. But I thought it really stood out how big of a star Darby was on this show, especially after seeing, you know, MJF and Brian Pillman match didn't get great reactions, kind of understandably so. And then you had really weird reactions to Cody, or, you know, not totally expected reactions to Cody. And so you're kind of off kilter a little bit. And then Darby and Sting come out. And yes, Sting, of course, got a big reaction. But Darby got a huge reaction when it was like time for him to shine. And just not just for him to shine, but for the spotlight to be on him in this match. The crowd went insane. It's like, oh, this guy, even with, I'm going to talk about Cody later, I'm sure. But even with all these new people coming in, Darby is still one of the top stars in this company. And that was made obvious in this match.
Well, I think what especially illustrated that is the match opened with Darby in the ring and people started chanting for Darby, and they did a little spot where, you know, FTR almost trapped Darby in the corner and he escaped and he goes back to the other corner and the crowd's like chanting for Darby. And then Darby's like, oh, well, I'm supposed to tag Sting now. So he goes, he tags Sting, and JR's like, Excalibur, you say you've got to give the people what they want. And it's like, well, JR, they wanted they were chanting for Darby. Like, obviously they're happy with Sting. Everybody's happy with Sting. Sting had a great match. But yeah, they were in from that opening bell for Darby, which is, you know, pretty much, I mean, if you wanted to lay out a partnership like this, you know, a veteran legend and then the young guy that he's kind of giving the endorsement to and giving it some rub to, but you also don't want to have him overshadowed. You also want to make him a star in his own right. That's like pretty much the exact reaction you want, is like, yeah, we're fucking pumped for Sting, but we're also extremely pumped for Darby. So that was great. The match was great. I think maybe FTR's best match in this company. I don't know. Do we have any thoughts on that? I thought it pretty much delivered. FTR kind of, this is the best role for them, being guys who can facilitate, you know, a 60-year-old man like Sting and still make him, you know, look phenomenal, but can bump all over the place and do the you know, tag sell on his heels and so on and so forth. It was very exciting and a great finish. Like you said, Darby super over, but really the match was built around the big Sting comeback and finish, and he delivered in spades there. So you know, if I was not on deck to do the first thing here, this probably would have been my elite, was this match.
Yeah, and this was probably the thing that over delivered the most, like coming in and exceeded expectations. Like, just under it's something where the early moments in the match really was kind of the stuff that I can't necessarily stand about FTR. But as soon as, like, I was like, oh, the key of this match is just doing crazy stuff and being crazy over. And the FTR is like, oh, we're just going to go and play this role, which actually secretly is our best role. So, yeah, I totally understand your rationale, Nate, thinking like this is their best match because it played into their strengths the most. And it's something that when previewing this, Aaron, like, our big issue is like, how are they going to facilitate like the big crowd reactions that are actually the basis of these matches, not selling. It's what's gained the crowd reacting. And how do you do that? Darby Allin is a superstar. Sting is an icon. The crowd perceives them as that, and they timed it out incredibly well. And we started to get see some red face paint. Maybe we can get to the insane icon version of Sting coming up real soon against, if that's how we are going to have this Tully match with the insane icon Sting, that's the only way that I could sit through that, I think.
I'm hopeful we just don't. There was like one Tully spot in here. It was just like Sting taking out Tully. Yeah. I'm like, if that's it, that's great. I'm thrilled. If that's like, you know, Sting has one bar for Tully. I also want to shout out Sting. The spot where he is out on his feet and falls and does a headbutt to Dax's crotch, just like an old school comedy spot, that killed me. Him busting that out at 62 years old.
I thought the way that they, you know, what we talked about this morning, Mike, the way that they made it interesting, you know, FTR likes to work the slow, drawn out Southern match. And I think we've talked on this show, Nate, especially, that, you know, the sprint is really more of what they're better at. And they kind of did both here, where they had the bits of a Southern style tag match with the hot tags. You know, Mike, we talked about who's going to get the hot tag. Well, they just did both. They gave Darby a hot tag and they gave Sting a hot tag, but they kept those segments short. Instead of, like, it wasn't that the crowd really wanted to see the other guy tagged in because his partner had been downselling so long. It was just the crowd wanted to see the other guy because they liked the other guy, and they went to it, kept it going quickly, and it was excellent. I really enjoyed it.
And the right team won.
I don't think the Tully thing's coming because, like, they are a tag team, but FTR is, you know, talked about as like one of the great tag teams, and they just fucking lost like pretty clean.
Yeah.
So to me, the story's over, but we'll see what happens next. Listener Elite, if you want to be featured, you just have to be a subscriber. You got to be on our Patreon and then go in the Discord and tell us your Elite and D-Elite picks from the show. Our Elite pick comes from Swarles, who says, all this fucking wrestling. They did like two promos all show. I was, you know, looking back at my notes at the end of the show, they were very short because it's just like match, finish, all action on this show.
I cannot endorse that, Elite.
Well, I need you to, Nate. It's very important.
Well, I don't. Too much wrestling. No, I don't know. You know, probably their biggest, I don't know, maybe not. One of their biggest television audiences of all time. And there was not a big, not even, you don't need a big hook angle even. No, there was not a angle to drive you forward as far as something new developing. There was like, hey, this is the match that's already booked on Friday. And, you know, we're going to talk about it and so on. I guess that was the Punk. Really, the Punk promo was the big thing that was like, hey, here's the next thing that you should stay tuned to this company for. So it was good, I guess. But I don't know. I kind of talked myself into on this show just because, you know, got the big room, got the big television audience. Maybe this would have been where you turn Wardlow on MJF. And maybe that's your big angle to say, hey, here's a big exciting thing happening that people went apeshit for. You know, stay tuned. We're going to follow up on that in a week or two. But yeah, I would have liked a little bit more. Little bit more angle action, a little bit more, you know, character stuff. This is probably the fewest angles we've ever had on an AEW show, right? That's like our complaint. my complaint is, oh, they did an attack angle after every single segment. Every match ended with an attack. Every promo ends with an attack. And this had like just the main event, or not the main event, just the opener. And also, did the main event also? I don't think it did. Just the opener.
No. I don't know. I think they were more just saying, hey, if you're tuning in, our show's no bullshit, all action. Come back next week. I think that works. Now, the show is quite a bit more bullshit and quite a bit less action.
That's not true.
They don't have to tell them that. I mean, you're selling, Nate.
False bill of goods.
Well, if you don't want to have false balls of goods, you got to hang out with our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Nate is terrified by this. It's back to school time, as everyone knows, and we want to make sure you pack the essentials to have the best year yet. The essentials are the Manscaped 4th Generation Performance Package. As everybody knows, we have the brand new Lawnmower 4.0 for if you're going for the valedictorian of ball trimming and joining the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. And so you have to go to manscaped.com, use the code this is, and here's the package. It's the Lawnmower 4.0. It's the Weed Whacker Ear and Nose Hair Trimmer. It's the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, the Crop Reviver Toner, two free gifts, the Boxer Briefs, and the Shed Travel Bag. On the Crop Preserver, went out to a, what's the right word for this? Like, I don't know. They got like booths and stuff. You can like, there's clothes, there's food, you know, like whatever. I don't know. It's that kind of thing, but it's outside. But this weekend it was like suddenly like 95 degrees again when it hadn't been for some time. Did not put on the Crop Preserver before I went out. Huge mistake. Really regretted that for about 3 days until I calmed down the consequences of my actions. My skin does not like all the hot and the sweat. It just doesn't. The Crop Preserver solves all that. But luckily, and it's especially true if you screw around and attend Smooth Balls University. Because if you got the smooth balls, they're rubbing up against your legs in the heat. It's bad. You got to have the Crop Preserver. But those are all the things you get. Order the bag. Order the performance package. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code THISIS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code THISIS at manscaped.com. This year, graduate with a degree in clean balls from Manscaped. I'm not sure Nate ever recovered from the opening to that ad read.
I was aghast.
I didn't recover from you not knowing what a farmer's market was.
It wasn't really a farmer's market. There wasn't like fruit.
Farmer's market.
It was like a summer festival.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was like a lot of like vintage, you know, clothing booths, and then there was like, you know, food trucks.
Yeah, the farmer's market might be pretty correct for that.
Yeah.
There was nothing grown by farmers. It was, you know, food trucks.
When's the
swap meets?
I mean, it's basically a flea market, but it's like a hipster version of a flea market.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that, well, I think, so I think you're both right. I think a hipster version of a flea market is a farmer's market, irrelevant of whether farmers are actually present. Because I think flea market has, you know, kind of a low-class connotation. So the hipsters are like, well, we got to rebrand this.
I mean, it was literally called, okay, so fleur-de-lis is a Louisville thing.
He's got the literal name. I think it's a New Orleans thing. Go on.
It is, but it's also a Louisville thing. And this was called the fleur de flea.
Okay, so flea market.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Flea market. All right, well, speaking of bad things, let's talk about the things we didn't like from the show. Nate, what was your delete pick from this week?
This kind of goes a little bit hand-in-hand with my previous takedown, utter takedown of Swirls Elite. Take that, Swirls. Just kidding. There was, I guess, outside of the opening match and outside of just the massive crowd reactions in general, there was not that sort of special thing that they do a lot of the time to make this show feel like special or distinct or, you know, somehow memorable outside of those kind of things that were intrinsic to the setting. They did the big worms ramp with the LEDs of the plexiglass on the ramp. You know, that was a nice touch. But I don't know. I really wanted something calling attention to the specific venue, some kind of tennis tie-in. You know, John McEnroe or Andre Agassi ringing the opening bell for the match. I thought MJF might come out in his Wimbledon whites, but that was nowhere to be found. I just wanted some kind of, you know, special theming or you know, some kind of a spectacle that would give it a little bit more flavor, more than just, hey, we're running a really big building. And on that point, the production of the building was not especially special, I didn't think. They really just, they cast the entire building in blue light outside of, you know, the first section of seats. So, and also, as I complained, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, or whatever, every fucking camera shot in this promotion is so super tight on everybody's face or so super tight on the spot that it's not like you can see the building anyway. So it kind of just seemed like a normal show in that regard. Like the crowd was loud, but then it's like, hey, here's somebody's super close face. And then we're going to pull back and we're going to see the ring for a minute. And it's just going to look like a SmackDown show because everything's blue. So that was kind of a disappointment to me. I wanted some kind of spectacle, some kind of angle, some kind of special guest event kind of thing that would make it feel like, oh, they are in Arthur Ashe Stadium. And I'm going to remember this little facet of it forever.
I did not have that thought about the show cross my mind, Abe. But now that you mention it, like, whereas the first dance was so very Chicago themed and like played off of being at the United Center and then like being able like CM Punk for like that all felt like an event there. This really was, right? We have Bryan Danielson versus Kenny Omega. They're going to go out and have the dream match. And then we're just going to have this big show in our biggest arena here. This is our biggest attendance there. And like, even like, it's something that I noticed even with like All Out that like, they don't really do like special entrance ways. Like, remember like when they would have like the poker chips and then like the palm trees and that's the way they would like pretty things up here. It was Worms Ramp and they had more LED lights behind everyone, which looked kind of cool. Looked kind of like those 90s Tokyo Domes shows, like when they would come in. From think of one, I actually kind of remind me of like Dream Slam in a way. But yeah, you would think there would be a little bit more of a tie-in. Like apparently there was a kind of like celebrity tie-in that happened between the Dynamite and Rampage, so they did do something like that, but not for the television audience. And I totally understand, like, because you would feel like this would be like a big WrestleMania, Wrestle Kingdom, just large show moment. And other than the venue and other than like the dream match, this was a big episode of television. Because Aaron, we talked about this on Light, like comparing this to like Winter Is Coming in a way. Like, this felt like the biggest Dynamite since Winter Was Coming. And, you know, now that we're looking back at it in hindsight, other than like the dream match, what difference between this and the Crossroads episode of Dynamite with Shaq? Like, that had like a more notable thing. Like, I guess in the vein of what you're talking about, Nate, that like stuck out with Shaq being there than happened tonight?
Guys, I feel like I'm insane. They did a television show where the first 20 minutes was Bryan Danielson versus Kenny Omega. It was Bryan Danielson's first match outside of WWE in a very long time. But what the fuck else do you need?
They did a big match and they did a draw. And then it was just like a normal episode. They did really big matches on the show.
They
but
did
also,
a ton of big matches on the show.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the size of the matches. I'm talking about
some pomp,
the flavor around it that makes it feel like a special circumstance.
I think that is what made it feel like a special circumstance. The crowd was insane because of that.
Yeah. Also, they put all the New York guys on the Friday show. They didn't put Eddie on this show. They didn't put the Santana and Ortiz tag on this show. They're all on the Friday show. So we didn't even get like that hometown moment for anybody. If you had swapped like the Sting and FTR tag with like the Santana Lucha Brothers tag, maybe that would have given it, give them like a special New York themed entrance. That would have maybe solved the problem a bit for me. But yeah, it was, they did the really big match and it felt like a giant show with a giant crowd. And then it just felt like a show in front of a really giant crowd with, again, the crowd very loud. Just, yes, like Mike said, a special entranceway that might have made it feel a little bit different. Just some kind of flavor, some kind of pomp, some kind of circumstance, some kind of spectacle.
Nate just wants some pomp. Aaron, can Nate have some pomp,
again,
please?
Again, Aaron, you're trying to tell me something special because of a wrestling match? Come on.
I mean, in this scenario, yes, I am.
I need spectacle, baby.
I didn't know you were all about the parentheses pomp.
All about the THA.
Yeah.
Parentheses pomp. Yes.
Yeah. All right,
and
Mike.
I even got to wait till Friday for that. Come on.
I know. I'm sorry. Mike, your delete pick from this week's show.
Well, the one match on the show that was actually bad, like Cody versus Malakai Black, just was a really weird match, I would say. It was mostly bad, it just was something that I feel like that I'm often a Cody defender in the greater scheme of things. Like Cody very clearly had a certain role in relationship to the audience and to the promotion. And this felt like now, like I remember like some group DM, some chats saying like Cody kind of feels left behind after this.
Ooh, I said that.
Yeah. But like, and it's also like a weird thing because Cody, like this is the first time that like a crowd really outright like rejected Cody here. And then they went and they had a match with Arn Bumps, Miss. The Miss was cool. The Miss was funny. But also it's something like Malakai Black actually feels like a superstar, like coming in here and you're rerunning a playbook that you're running, but this isn't last year. This isn't behind closed doors. Now you have fan input here, and it's not something where I'm like completely out on Cody. I think that would be kind of jumping to a conclusion, but I think it'll be something very interesting to see because this felt like this would be the conclusion. And instead we had Malakai Black winning with Mist and doing a roll up, and it didn't really feel definitive there. It just was like a really bizarre, at least to me, match, just everything around it, like the way the reaction is. Actually, like that might be one of the things that like resonates for me from the show, is like this match was weird to me.
Yeah, I think I will certainly remember it for a while. I think so I don't know that the match itself was bad. I tweeted that the match was like pretty good for like a 2006 John Cena match where you have the Valiant babyface doing his, fucking OVW babyface stuff and getting booed out of the building for it. And everybody hates him. It was a lot like that. It was also a lot like that Cody Okada match in Ring of Honor where it was champion versus champion. And the heat and the intensity was insane because everybody was terrified that Cody was going to win the IWGP title. Remember that? Reminded me of that match because the crowd the same way was like on the edge of their seats, worried that Cody was going to, beat Malakai Black here, which didn't happen. So I'll give him credit for that. But yeah, I said that in a DM. It felt like in the time Cody's been gone, the promotion, accelerated and grew three sizes or whatever, and kind of just left him behind a little bit. When CM Punk first showed up at the First Dance, I asked on this show, hey, is it a problem that CM Punk is suddenly the biggest star on this promotion by far, and he like totally eclipses everybody else in the promotion in terms of his star power? And we decided that probably wasn't a problem, and that turned out to be true, because they added Bryan Danielson, Ruby Soho, Adam Cole, the dark horse for the biggest star out of all of them, apparently. And then, you know, Kenny Omega was right there up to speed with Bryan Danielson. He doesn't feel like he's overshadowed at all. The Young Bucks, they're right there with Adam Cole in that program. Don't feel like they've been overshadowed whatsoever. Just had that, you know, tremendous cage match on All Out that's going to keep them fresh into the top of people's, you know, tier lists or whatever. But Cody has been gone and comes back, and it just kind of felt like he was coming back from this promotion 2 years ago. And all of a sudden it's like, this is the promotion that was going head to head with NXT instead of the promotion that's beating Raw every night. That's kind of just what it felt like to me. He's always spared no amount of spotlight for himself. I said the other week, and of course that was no different. So not only does he get the special entrance, not only does he get separate entrances for each of his, seconds, his coach and his wife, he's got the cape that literally is the length of the entire rampway. I don't know if you guys saw that, the cape that he was wearing goes all the way up through fucking ramp. And it just kind of felt, it's like what a heel would do. It felt like he should have been the heel there. The crowd received him like a heel. Oh, and the other person I failed to mention was they added Malakai Black, and Malakai Black all of a sudden seems like a much bigger star. And Malakai Black is getting the giant reactions, and Cody is not, I think, necessarily being booed because he's Cody. I don't think these people necessarily dislike Cody that much. They just don't want him to win this match because they think that Malakai Black is their guy, he's their star, and he needs to win the match. So I'll give him credit for that, but yeah, it did kind of expose some stuff that's not working with Cody. And he said in an interview like a week ago or a couple days ago that he's not going to turn heel, so he's doubling down on that John Cena thing. But I don't know of how long this is going to work, if this is the reaction he's getting right now, if he's going to be able to keep finding audiences that are going to stick with him and want him to be their guy in these programs.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. you can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Cody, to me, you know, looking back, was like this stand-in for the fans' idea, the AEW fans' idea, that we needed AEW because WWE had failed us, had all these guys that they could have succeeded with, and they failed them, and therefore they failed the audience. I mean, you know, a way that this promotion kicked off was Cody, you know, destroying the Triple H throne, right? We were all looked at that as like, that's right. Now these are our guys we can get behind, and AEW is not going to fuck up with these guys. They're going to do these guys right. It's not going to be guys like Triple H ruining it for everyone. And everybody got behind him, and they got behind everything he did because he stood for that. So he could do everything he did in this exact match that he did against, you know, Sean Spears that we all watched, and people went fucking nuts for it. Well, since then, you know, AEW brought in CM Punk, the actual guy who exposes WWE's failures. You know, Cody is a guy who, yeah, maybe he could have been a bigger star in WWE, but probably not, right? Like, he probably wasn't ever, the way that he is, going to be someone who could have been a big star in WWE. He was able to use that to become a big star in AEW. But a guy like Punk is a guy who, yes, he was a big star in WWE, but the way that it all went down, of course, people view him as the actual symbol of McMahonism and its failures. And now he's here. So we don't have to root for Cody anymore, because everything AEW fans were kind of putting aside the things that they like to root for Cody. Cody doesn't do the big spot filled matches where he's doing all these crazy moves that everybody likes. He doesn't do these epic New Japan style things that you can get behind. He does his whole own thing. And AEW fans were like, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to go with this and we're going to enjoy it. And they don't have to anymore. And so I don't know. I don't think it's over for Cody at AEW by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm interested to see when we're back in, you know, fucking Milwaukee or whatever, like what the reaction is to Cody. But this is a bad sign for Cody. It's definitely.
It's something that, like, talking about his role as Fan Analog now being completely replaced by the original Fan Analog kind of reminds me of a conversation we had last year about when they had no crowds. And it's like, how is Cody going to really work at that point with no crowds? And instead, like, they found a way to kind of make it work here. Now it's an issue of what's going to happen now, because, like, being in Miami, like, I was not instantly into the storyline, but Malakai Black felt like an absolute star, and everything since then has come off on this. And it's just, in this match, it kind of was like a confluence of all these things that maybe it's a blip and maybe it's something to keep an eye on. It's just one of those things that on a show that felt like, even though, like Nate said, not necessarily like pomp heavy, it was all here are great matches here. This was the match to me that stood out.
Yeah, Aaron, great point. That's our segment to clip for the Twitter account. If you want to get that in the bin early here. Is your description of Cody there as the Fan Analog that we took. And I said previously on this show that, you know, CM Punk was the vanguard of that in WWE. He's like, hey, I'm the guy who's going to point out this show fucking sucks. This promotion fucking sucks. It's always been bad. And you guys keep showing up and it's going to continue to be bad, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there was a brief moment in time where we're like, oh, wow. They actually know all these problems with their promotion. Maybe CM Punk is actually going to make them fix those by becoming popular, and didn't happen. And then, you know, obviously he had his health issues there, and he had his, you know, booking issues and everything else issues there with the way that they treated him. So he left. And then the WWE fans, us, had Daniel Bryan. He was our consolation prize for CM Punk. And they actually followed that one through to WrestleMania 30, mostly because they had their hand absolutely forced, because everything else was being soundly rejected, much like Cody was tonight. But he was the consolation prize for CM Punk. The only reason that he had that giant groundswell of support and became the whole Yes Movement, blah, 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 was because CM Punk was gone and the fans were latched on to the next guy that they liked. I mentioned that it was Money in the Bank 2011, whatever the Punk show in Chicago was, where Bryan Danielson won the Money in the Bank and, you know, sort of started that slow road to him actually getting to that level. But then Bryan Danielson was forced into retirement because of his health issues. And even prior to him being forced into retirement was, you know, basically booked into irrelevance. He won those titles at WrestleMania 30 and then went into a god-awful program with Kane. And it immediately became evident, oh, no, nothing's changing at all. It's going to be the same god-awful show, but with a different guy on top. So he leaves. And then finally, Cody is the guy. I'll give Cody, you know, so much credit for this. He's the guy who sacked up and went, no, I'm leaving. I'm leaving this company. I'm demanding my release. And I'm going to go to the grassroots. I'm going to go to the independent level. I'm going to do all these things that I want. I'm going to wrestle these guys that I want to. And I'm going to, you know, I don't know if this was explicitly stated, but, you know, I'm going to improve the wrestling business by going and working those other places and bringing, you know, whatever I can to your PWGs, Ring of Honors, Evolves, blah, blah, blah. So I'll give Cody all the credit in the world, because a lot of guys, you know, didn't take that step. A lot of guys sit on Twitter and complain about WWE and their spot and their matches and their booking, blah, 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 and then just, you know, re-sign with their contracts up and, you know, will forever mean nothing to me for that reason. But Cody quit, went out, and was a genuine difference maker and brought a lot of his fans to Ring of Honor and went, hey, here's the Young Bucks. You guys would like these guys. And it's, and that was, of course, you know, started the impetus to All in this promotion. So give Cody all that credit, but you're absolutely right. He was the consolation prize for Daniel Bryan, who was the consolation prize for CM Punk. And now we have CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. So certainly there's going to be fans that like his shit. There's going to be fans that are loyal to him for those reasons, but he's, you know, he's Diet Coke and CM Punk is Pepsi and Daniel Bryan's Coke and Cody's Diet Coke. So he's got to find another reason to get people on board. I think a heel turn and going after Danielson and Punk for those exact reasons, I think that'd be a tremendous story. I would watch the shit out of that. If he took a sledgehammer to Bryan Danielson's head and was like, you know, I was fucking here. I was here on day one. Where were you? You were doing that bullshit. So he's got to do some kind of course change, I think, after this match, because this laid bare a lot of those things that are not going to work for him going forward, I think, in this promotion.
Unfortunately, I think he's seen a pill of like, oh no, I have to be the good guy forever so right. That I can be on TV. And
I think you're right.
In movies and whatnot. And so it's kind of funny that like Cena in WWE, like that whole thing is what kept him from being anything in WWE. And now you're right. Everything you said about how he kind of he did something different than everybody. But now it's like he's trying to recreate that of like, no, I just want. It's not that you didn't use me the way I wanted you to. It's that I wanted to be John Cena.
Yeah.
And you picked John Cena instead of me. So now I can be John Cena.
And at the same point, it'll be very interesting to see how the next storyline is. Because I feel like that's really going to be like, is this going to be a blip or is this actually going to be a big problem? Like the interesting analog is that like Cody had such a value because he was such a good like PR media person, and he was the person that Turner and Warner Media obviously gravitated towards. What happens now with like the new influx in this situation? It's very interesting because he got to like in a lot of ways play Cena, and with like the way that like having all the shoulder content around him and Brandy. But what's going to happen with like people who did this before and had the shoulder content about them before now are available? So you have other options from that stance, and that's just pure speculation, I guess.
I think he does okay there, because I think being the media guy and being the super nice suit guy and looking like a million bucks and knowing how to cultivate those relationships and you know, shake those hands and do that stuff, that can be a role in and of itself. That's like that's the Miz's entire career, right? Is that he has media
training, right?
Because who were you saying earlier today is the Miz?
I was saying that Adam Cole is like the Miz is like the Miz if he you know, all of his stats got turned up to 99 or whatever, then he would be Adam Cole. I do a lot of Miz comparisons because the Miz is like
Cody is the fucking Miz.
That's not even fair to him. That's like that's a little harsh. But in terms of like, I mean, he's absolutely better at, you know, glad handing people and being you know, personality in a room and all this stuff too, and not seeming like such a phony as the Miz either. I can't imagine that he's not better at that than the Miz actually is too, but that can be its own role. And also I think you don't have to worry about it being Bryan Danielson, because Bryan Danielson would go meet these Turner executives and be like, hey, do you ever think about how apples are tree semen? So I think Cody's probably, you know, Punk can go do his, you know, Comic Cons and all this, you know, I don't know. Do they still have like Walking Dead reaction shows? I remember he used to do those things. But you know, Cody being
right,
you know, the guy in with the suits, wearing the suit in the room with the suits, I think Cody is still still well tailored for.
For those who are wondering when we were going to have the first mention of apples as tree cum reference here, 57 minutes on the Zencaster recording.
Honestly, I think everyone would have been on the under on that.
Yes,
so pretty surprising.
A lot of discretion shown by us today.
I think so. I'm very impressed with
us. I mean,
us.
We got to Bentley kind of dropped the ball not putting in the Manscaped ad read.
That's true. I'm ashamed of myself, to be honest, when it comes to that.
It was a very good segue, though, Big Cat. You did a great job.
Thanks. This came up in my mentions and then a little bit in a DM, but is this all the fault of the America promo that Cody cut? Did the America promo end his goodwill?
I don't think so. I think the people that are Cody fans probably like that promo. I think that promo, again, you guys thought that it was getting like booed. I thought there was like one boo.
I thought there was very, but I don't think that was. I thought there was a lot of confusion.
I think
it was
that,
confusion.
Oh my God. that was not so far afield from his normal shit that it would, I think, turn his fans against him. That's my position.
We went long on that one, so I'm going to keep my delete brief and not that serious. But I hated FTR's gear. And the reason is this. They're supposed to be these like, oh, we're all about the old school, baby. And they come out in this NWO gear, which is like, did you fucking not understand what the point of the NWO was?
I thought it was cute.
The NWO versus the Four Horsemen was like a big thing, guys. So
yeah, but anyways, I thought it was
just
cute.
Annoying to
you
me.
Know, NWO was rivals with Sting, and they were up against Sting. So like, well, we're gonna cosplay as our favorite Sting rivals because they're cosplay wrestlers.
I mean, exactly. It's there's no there. That's my complaint. Not
yeah.
That, I mean, yes, I get that point, but
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I did think of my own analogy of FTR as the game of tag teams where they just reference other
yes.
wrestling acts.
Yes.
I did think of that while watching this match, but
honestly, one of the best points made on this podcast in its history, frankly.
The thing that happened to me, Aaron, with this gear was that I was in the Discord and I saw someone make a comment of that gear is awful. Their gear is awful. So I was expecting like a real bad set of gear. And then I saw them come out on this. I was like, all right, okay, this is what you're doing right now. Should have saw this coming. And this is like 2 weeks after they were wearing Bobby Eaton gear. So I was like, the Bobby Eaton gear, I was like, no, that's like really sweet and heartwarming. This one, I was like, oh, of course.
I thought it was cute.
Listener delete, our friend Vote UJ, a match we haven't talked about yet. He says, delete, bad ending to your huge show. Even if Ruby doesn't win, a shit finish ain't it. That's Vote UJ's take.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong. It didn't like bother me, and you know, it wasn't sour to me at the time, but yeah, I can see how people would be like, oh, you know, big, huge 2-hour show and somebody cheats and that's that. Then the show's just over. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised you haven't said that Omega and Danielson, you know, should have been the main event of the show. I mean, you've called it the main event several times, but
yes. So that was going to be my delete, but then I realized, oh, they just did that because they're doing a draw. So they didn't want the show to end with a draw. They wanted to, you know, cue to the fans or tip their hand by putting the match on first and not kind of leave that sour taste in people's mouth. But, you know, I guess Vote UJ is right that if you're just going to do a fuck finish in the final match anyway, then maybe you should have put the FTR tag on last. But I also can't really complain about them putting the women's title match on last because it is a title match, and I do think title matches should be main events. So, yeah. I guess that's any way you cut it, I can find a complaint about it.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Like, I totally get it being deflating. I just think it's now something that's such a core concept of Britt's character that, like, Britt winning was going to be some sort of her goons gets her out of it. So.
And deflate footballs with over $500,000 in contest prize money up for grabs. The NFL is back in action, and so is winning season over at MyBookie. If you head to mybookie.ag, you can choose from a variety of boosts and free bets. Get in on the fan favorite $100,000 super contest. It's only 10 bucks to enter. Basically, you pick five games against the spread each week. Every time you're right, you get a point, and that gets you closer to the grand prize. So you're not necessarily betting on each of these games, but you're, you know, betting that you can win, pick more of these games correctly than anybody else. And to get you started, you can make your first deposit at mybookie.ag and use the promo code ELITE to instantly receive double your deposit. You put in $100, they'll give you $100. 200, you know, you can do the math. You understand. It's not the quintile or whatever, but it's up there. That's with your first ever deposit. You just got to use the promo code ELITE. So bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. All right. Well, I mean, usually this is where we get into the rest of the show, but we've covered almost everything. So we'll just hit a few of the things that we haven't. So it started off with Omega and Danielson. Then we had the Punk promo. We had MJF and Brian Pillman Jr., which we haven't talked about. MJF won with the Salt of the Earth.
Yeah, I was kind of struck during this. So I kind of have liked Brian Pillman as a babyface. He does some unique things that other babyfaces aren't doing right now. But coming right off this opening match, this, you know, this was the first match that had to follow it. And they like go into a chop battle. And it's like, guys, we just saw these guys chopping each other's chests raw. And you could hear the chops, you know, clear as day on camera. And then these two guys go out and like are doing their chops. And it's like, it's just not the same. And, you know, Brian Pillman, he doesn't run the ropes the same as those other guys. He like runs a step slower. All of his strikes are a step slower. I was kind of struck by like Pillman would do his comebacks or whatever. He'd do his hope spots or whatever and start throwing these strikes. And then MJF would cut him off. And I'd go, oh, thank God. Because then MJF's offense would look like much snappier and quicker. And I'm like, oh, there it goes. So that was my take on this was Brian Pillman, I didn't really think was ready for this spot.
For like this kind of storyline of and keeping MJF busy, this was keeping MJF busy. Like it was something that like it's something that there's a lot of people in this promotion that I feel like are in real interesting spots. And MJF right now, I mean, what do you really do if he's not making title challenges or interjecting himself with the Elite when you have two heel champions? It's just kind of difficult. My one like big takeaway, like I thought everything was just like fine, like everything worked, it just kind of hit everything it should. When Julia Hart was thrust into the kind of the outside of the match with MJF, and then yet again, whoever is this camera operator that works on the floor to take these shots needs to get like a massive rage, because it was another instance of great camera work. It was just like the 2.0 with Sting and then Darby flying in, and you just see him just because of where how the shot was framed. You only see him at the last moment. We got that with Brian Pillman Jr. doing his like baseball slide kick, and that's like my one like Brian Pillman move that I'll take away from this, was that shot looked amazing, and it was really cool seeing him come out of nowhere with that. But the rest of it was just kind of there, I would say.
Yeah, I think you all are right. I said on Light this morning that Pillman had a chance to like garner some investment in him if he came out and had, you know, he didn't have to have a great match, but had an exciting match. And I thought MJF was someone who could have helped him to an exciting match. And it just didn't come out that way. Just didn't work out to be an exciting match. They were in a pretty tough position, but they didn't really do anything to take advantage of the spot they were in. So, I don't know. Not a good sign for like, you know, you could imagine a world where they have this really exciting match and you're like, oh, maybe they got something with Brian Pillman, and you can imagine him getting, you know, a TNT title challenge that he loses, you know, somewhere down the road. But that didn't happen. So I don't see that coming anytime soon.
And I was doubly disappointed because they had Julia Hart there. Julia Hart came out with Brian Pillman and Justin Roberts announced her. But she didn't point at her own name, which is my favorite part of the whole act.
Yeah, pretty big bummer. And I guess Griff is unvaccinated, right? Is that why we didn't see Griff?
It wouldn't be shocking.
No, not at all.
Based on his Twitter follows.
Yeah. Or Havana Syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, technically, I guess he got like laid out, right? His MJF and Wardlow beat him up
right
the other week. Yeah. So maybe he's, but yeah, that computes or could compute also. It could be someone's opinion that makes sense.
Yep. No. He submitted clips for Sammy's vlog this week rather than being there last week. People could connect their own dots and interpret as they will.
Basically, if there's someone that you didn't see last week or this week, just assume they didn't get the vaccine.
That is not a professional legal representation of the podcast. It is merely for entertainment purposes.
I don't think we could get in trouble for that, really. But maybe.
No, I mean, no. Joke.
Sorry.
No, seems to me, just broadly speaking, like, if you've got a foothold in the hottest wrestling promotion on the planet, I wouldn't give that up because you want to be a fucking dumbass.
There's a lot of good reasons to be a dumbass, but it's not one of them.
Yeah. This is all, assuming you're a professional wrestler and that you want to make a living in professional wrestling. This is not speaking with specific reference to anyone, but like, seems like because you prefer to read, dumb shit news for assholes and not get vaccinated. if that's more important to you than like maintaining your job in the top wrestling promotion in the world, I would just reassess your priorities, maybe.
Just an idea.
Okay. Also clipping this for Twitter.
like, these guys think they're fucking scientists. It's like, oh, I have to be principled about my science. It's like, I know I'm a professional wrestler and that's my job. And right now, like, I had my dream job and I'm like pushed in this company. And like, I could make a lot of money. I could be a big star. But it's just like, science is so important to me. I really have to be principled about my science because I have such a passion for science on the side that I'm going to put that ahead of my fucking day job, which is, I am not by any means like guaranteed this spot or like even necessarily the best guy for this spot, but I have it right now.
I just really want to be on Louder with Crowder if I get a chance. That's a bigger spot to me.
My career role model is Tyrus. I really want to be a fucking, mediocre wrestler who gets like a big push above my station. And then I want to get fired from that, but go on to be a serial sexual harasser on Fox News, allegedly.
Where I opine on like all issues of the day. I love when somebody posts a screenshot of Tyrus and it's like Havana Syndrome, real or fake? I mean, obviously they don't talk about that on Fox News, but you know what I mean.
And he's sitting there with the NWA TV title belt on his shoulder.
Yeah. That's really embarrassing.
Yeah. Speaking of embarrassing, then we had Chris Jericho and Jake Hager backstage with Alex Marvez.
Somebody better call my mama. Was that him?
Yes.
Was that, he had the grandmas that came out of WrestleMania?
The grandmas? I don't remember that.
Yeah, the dancing grandmas?
I don't remember that. He definitely had the Funkadactyls.
I swear to God. The Funkadactyls.
Yes.
I swear to God, he had dancing grandmas at WrestleMania.
No, he did. Yeah. It was the Miami WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This was basically just a boring babyface promo, but it was funny to see Marvez try not to laugh.
See, that's what the show was. That's what the show is lacking, was the spectacle of dancing grandmas coming out. That's why WWE remains the king. It's because Vince McMahon has that just, clear, brilliant mind where he understands what the casual people out there want to see. They want storytelling. And that means 6 months of Brodus Clay hype videos paying off with him coming out of WrestleMania with dancing grandmas.
6 months of Emelina hype videos where she never debuts.
And then coming out to say, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. All right, Cody and Malakai Black. There was one build for next week, Nate, because they did this Miro and Sammy pre-tape where Miro says, yes, I did hurt my neck once, but God and my wife healed it. He said, God demands pain, my wife demands pleasure, and sometimes pain too. And then Sammy told us that if he wins the TNT title, he's going to buy Fuego a new car. This match is going to be on Dynamite next week.
Yeah, I was a little, I really liked Sammy in this promotion. I think even on the mic, he's been pretty good. But his promo setting up this match on Rampage was very much paint by numbers. I'm going to call you a bitch, and then I'm going to say you don't have any balls, you bitch. And then you say something about God. Well, I'm going to say I'm the Spanish God, and I'm going to say that twice. And then this following that was very... I didn't find anything in Sammy's promo to get hyped about or get enthused about.
I think Sammy getting Fuego another car after he's willing to put his car on lines and matches he was fated to lose might be a bad investment idea. I know he's your best friend, but Fuego has already shown that he will put cars on the line there.
That would be a funny storyline if Fuego puts the new car that Sammy bought on the line.
Keeps betting his cars. I think there's something there. Like that.
I mean, I think Sammy, right, this makes sense. Sammy wins the title and then he has a program with MJF?
That's what I do. Like that seems like for MJF, there's not much you can do with MJF other than like these storylines right now with like Brian Pillman Jr. unless he's in a title hunt. And Miro has been a great champion. It's just like, what is like the goal here other than Miro destroying a whole lot of people? Someone has to eventually beat him. And Sammy seems like Sammy made a big point about wanting to have a title and not being left off pay-per-views anymore. So it makes sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't not make sense, but something I'm having some negative reaction to it for some reason. There was definitely a period, you know, probably coming right off the pay-per-view Double or Nothing. Was that the Stadium Stampede?
Yes.
There was definitely a period there where I was like, wow, they heated Sammy up super well. You know, they've established him as a star with this Jericho tag and the stable and blah, blah, blah. He went out and had this killer match with MJF. You know, he's, you know, a perfect guy to be set up for a TNT title next. But now that we're here, I just kind of feel like he's not there. I think because they've had him on they've disappeared him from TV for a little while. He's come back with this little Fuego program now. But it seems like we've missed the real heat up for him, missed the real build of this where it's going to feel like a big earned moment when it happens. I'm that's like an ongoing complaint. You know, I'd say it's not dissimilar from when Darby won the TNT title from Cody and they just had him win the match out of the blue, right? Where it's like, well, you know, Cody beat him twice, blah, blah, blah. And then they're going to do another match all of a sudden. And then Darby just wins it. And I actually predicted the same thing was going to happen at the pay-per-view with the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks, where it's like, well, you know, the Lucha Brothers don't win enough matches in this promotion. And they haven't really been featured on Dynamite as a tag team. And now they got this title match because they won this little tournament. I bet they're just going to go on and win the tag titles just because it's just going to happen out of the blue. Because they've done this 2.5 week thing right before the pay-per-view. And that kind of feels like a pattern. They don't do like a sustained kind of thing for like a Sammy. It's just going to be, well, we've gotten him this level and now we're going to set up a match in a week and then we're going to build a match for 1 week and then he's just going to win it. So it definitely feels in play to me, but it's not as satisfying as it could be.
Well, I agree. He doesn't feel hot enough to win the match really, but it makes a lot of sense. I think it helps for one of your champions, one of your singles champion, to be a babyface, so you can kind of mix up some of your challengers. It definitely brings MJF into play. So it makes a lot of sense from that perspective to me, but I agree with you that it's... I'd say you're right about the Lucha Bros thing, but usually... And I guess you're right about the Darby thing too. But generally, when they switch titles, you kind of... It feels right, you know? It's like, okay, this is a good spot for a title change.
The Lucha Bros thing ended up satisfying to me just because the match was so great. And then I just had more of like a emotional investment in the Lucha Bros than I even realized until that happened. And then I was like, oh, wow, that was what a match. What a moment. What a, you know, journey for these guys. But that was like a, you know, me and the Lucha Brothers for, I don't know, eight years or something story. That wasn't a, you know, 2 year story in AEW. That was a, oh, I'm rooting for these performers. I'm not rooting for this, you know, this death triangle and their program with Andrade which is now turned into Lucha Brothers of the Young Bucks for some reason, and now they're just winning the belts. So you can't really give the AEW the credit for that. Well, I guess the match, but yeah, that's, you know, even this Bryan Danielson thing, it's like the build was not so hot that it, you know, the match, the work those guys did elsewhere is what made this match, right? It was not what they've done in this promotion that made this match. It was not the build of this match in this promotion that made this a dream match. And maybe that's true of all dream matches, but then it just feels like a distinction to me. It's like those, you know, the two in-ring segments with Bryan Danielson and Kenny Omega did not make this crowd this hot for this match.
No, not at all. But I thought they were still successful. I thought the in-ring segments were good.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't take away from anything.
Yeah, I mean, you got to
I guess just in my idealized idea of a wrestling promotion, it's like you're always enhancing, you're always escalating. You know, probably not possible a lot of the time.
Well, it's hard to escalate like Omega versus Danielson, right? I mean, I think that's people are already so fired up for that it's hard to make it like bigger stakes than it already is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's interesting.
I guess that's, you know, I guess maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way. And now that's starting now. This was the first step on that journey.
I think so. I think it is the first step. Then we had the tag match that we've talked about. The women's world title, of course, closed the match with Britt defeating Ruby with the lockjaw after Rebel and Jamie got involved. We talked about the finish, but we didn't talk much about the match. Does anybody else have anything else they want to say about this actual match?
I thought it was good. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were talking about toward the end of the match, like Ruby, oh, she's such a taxing battle, and talking about her perseverance and stuff. I kind of wonder if she got her bell rung on that air raid crash off the turnbuckle and she was a little thrown for a loop for the end of it. But still, I thought delivered and made everything land where it was supposed to for the end of that match. So, crowd was super into it for the dueling chants. They do a funny thing for the women's matches where it's not like the sustained heat of like, you know, the first match on the show, but they do these chants and then it's just kind of quiet for a while. And then somebody starts a chant and they do the dueling chants and it's super loud again. And then it just kind of goes quiet for a while. It's just a funny different texture to how the crowd sounds.
Yeah. I enjoyed this a good deal when I realized like, oh, my idea of them hotshotting the title and then stringing this out a little bit is not the plan. I ended up really enjoying it. I thought that like Ruby is such a phenomenal wrestler and kind of like the best kind of person to do like this main event match, Britt Baker world title match with, because like she just was like flying around for everything, just like being willing to take a avalanche air raid crash. And it was something that she came off incredibly well. And, you know, it's something that for Britt, like having someone that goes to those lengths makes her come off like a bigger star as well.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I was like, okay, Britt is really, you know, continuing to come along and improve. And Ruby is like, hey, she's good. So, you know, everything about this was positive and what you wanted for like your big women's title program.
I did. I thought I saw a couple of things where it was like, oh, Ruby is guiding Britt through this. It's different moments. I thought one of the best looking sling blades that Britt's ever done in this match.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I guess this feud will continue, I suppose, because of the shenanigans at the end.
I think so.
So we'll keep going and see where that goes. And I'll have to wait to see how they're going to pull this off from tear this off. Pivot away from this into whatever Ruby's going to do next. We didn't talk about, you know, there was a report from, I think I can now say, friend of the show, Andrew Zarian of the Mat Men.
I hope we didn't mispronounce his name while calling him a friend of the show. I assumed Zarian.
I don't know. I guess I don't know. Like,
I believe he's Armenian. So, do we have any Armenian pronunciation experts in the chat?
Yeah. Can anyone tell us? I don't know. I, you know, studied Japanese, so all the A's are A's. You know, so I just go with Ah. But yeah, it could be Zarian. Anyway, Andrew Z, our buddy, let us know Andrew, drop us a DM of the right way to pronounce your name, said there's going to be new women, some sort of women's title soon, a secondary women's title.
Yeah, he, I believe, teased more belt information on the next episode of the Mat Men podcast, which I think is out tomorrow, or if you're listening to this.
Okay, let's not do plugs for other podcasts on our podcast.
We're trying to get the hookup here. Come on. What do you want? The biggest Chad in wrestling media. The presumption is, hey, maybe either a TBS title, because they're moving to TBS and they've already got the TNT title. I have advocated for women's tag titles. Does seem a little bit significant that they've just now bothered to set up like the first women's tag feud in this promotion.
Yeah,
right now. So maybe that's a hint. But yeah, watch our Twitter account tomorrow, where probably we retweet their podcast account to see what scoop they have.
Absolutely. I don't know. I'll withhold my takes until we see what the actual title is. So I don't want to waste rounds out of the take chopper, you know?
I mean, it feels expensive right now. You know, we run a tight ship here.
He's not flying the take chopper. He's just sitting it on the ground and firing the machine gun.
No, this is not the take copter. This is the take chopper.
Know we diversified our take machines.
Well, I've borrowed this from a friend of the show, Ferrante.
The late great.
Yes.
Yeah.
RIP to a legend. You think Ferrante is vaccinated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, no, because he, I don't know. He might be too Rogan-pilled.
Hard to say.
I guess, like, my interest in this is I think that genuinely they've done with, like, the Women's Eliminator Tournament, I feel like that they've put on very compelling tournaments with this. So I'm interested to see, like, what they're going to do to set up this title. And until we know if it's a secondary singles title, kind of how, like, the NWA World Women's Championship filled that role for a little bit. Like, if it's going to be like that or a tag team division, I'm going to reserve fuel in the take copter in this time. So, yeah.
All right, well, that was Dynamite tonight. If you enjoy our show, the best way to support us...
You want to hit the Owen Hart thing?
Yeah.
Well, let me do the Patreon plug first, and then we will.
Fine.
Patreon.com/everythingelite. That's where you find us. We've got a bunch of tiers. We cover everything that AEW does. We have, of course, the show where we do Dynamite, and you can listen to it live on our $8 tier. We preview Dynamite on Light, which we do every Wednesday morning. Mike and I preview Dynamite. Nate breaks down BTE. You can get just that show on our $3 tier. And then we, of course, cover Rampage on our EE World Tour show, which is available on our $5 tier, along with all the other audio we do. This month, we've done an all-out retrospective from last year's all-out, an all-out preview, the all-out instant reaction. We also have... coming up soon. I don't want to promise it for this month, but it's going to be either this month or early next month. This is Bryan Danielson. Mike and I are working on that. And so that'll be coming up soon. We have a Discord that you can join and chat with us and get in on Elite or Delete, among other things. And Mike, I think, I don't want to overpromise you, but I think you're going to be doing Rose to the Top content.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize it'd be back to back. Or at least next week. But yes, I will. There'll be something with Roads to the Top. If I'm going to be watching this, I will be creating content for it. So, yeah.
Love it. Yeah, so that's patreon.com/everythingelite. Check it out. Subscribe. And we'll make lots of content. Promise. Owen Hart, yes, is... there's a new agreement between Martha Hart, the Owen Hart Foundation. I'm sorry, Dr. Martha Hart, the Owen Hart Foundation, and AEW. Licensing Owen Hart's is it name, image, and likeness? I'm college athletics build. So that, you know, Owen is going to be in video games. I think he's licensed for merchandise, everything, basically all the stuff they can do. So Owen Hart will now be featured in AEW content.
Yeah. Also, there's going to be a Owen tournament.
That's right. Yeah, I missed the most important part.
So yeah, no, this was really big. You know, I thought that this was an awesome thing to see. I thought that You know, it really is a statement that very quickly like the Owen Hart Foundation and Dr. Martha Hart over the, like, the last few years, like, oh yeah, no, we're cool with these people, but WWE can continue to, you know, fuck itself for what all happened with Owen Hart.
Yeah, you know, really nice to be able to do a show about a wrestling promotion, and they can do a nice thing like this, and you can have faith in them that they'll do it correctly, and, you know, feel good about watching it, and, you know, feel good about remembering what a great wrestler that guy was, and, you know, remembering all the struggle that his widow went through, and nice for her to get, you know, some relief here at the end, for her late husband and his wrestling career, and be able to share that with her family, and, you know, have happy associations with wrestling instead of negative ones. But, you know, like we said, true of a lot of people in this promotion, you know, bringing happy associations back to pro wrestling for people. So that's a very nice thing.
Yeah. And then also the Owen Hart Foundation seems to, at least from watching Dark Side of the Ring, seems to do a lot of great work in like Calgary and Western Canada. So, you know, like the fact that this is going to also be, I guess, helping out the foundation and people in that area, you know, it just seems like a incredibly positive thing across the board, in my opinion.
Yeah, my understanding of the deal is that the money that will come from AEW will all go to the Owen Hart Foundation. So that's my understanding, at least. Certainly could be wrong about that. But yeah, that's cool. And it got me, I saw some GIFs going around of Owen Hart matches, and it just got me thinking, like, oh, I need to go back and watch some, like, Owen Hart New Japan. Sounds very exciting. Okay, Rampage on Friday, a two-hour Rampage. It's happening as we record. I guess it's about to wrap up. We've got Adam Cole and the Young Bucks versus Christian and Jurassic Express. Chris Jericho and Jake Hager versus Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. CM Punk versus Will Hobbs. Anna Jay versus Penelope Ford. Minoru Suzuki and Lance Archer versus Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston. So a stacked Rampage that Mike and Nate will be covering on EE World Tour this weekend.
I mean, you know, apart from the Dream Card, or the Dream Match, the Rampage card kind of seems better than this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there, like with that, like they didn't even cover on Road to Grand Slam, like the Mox and Eddie stuff, like the promo that Eddie cut, like that's like such a compelling thing that, like, yeah, Nate, what you're saying about like not having one of like the New York City people on tonight's show, this one has a lot of that, and it's really, I'm really looking forward to see the response that Queens has for Eddie Kingston, that they have for Santana and Ortiz, and I'm really stoked to see that.
All right. Does the lights out match seem a little quaint now that we've had a Nick Gage death match in this promotion?
Yes.
Is that, it seems a little weird now, right?
Yeah. All right, let's call our shot here. Over under 1.5 million, 0.5 in the demo.
Ooh. Oh.
What you got?
Dang.
Can I break them into two? Or does it take it as 1.5.5?
No, you could break them into two. That's fine.
All right. I think over 1.5 million, under 0.5. I feel like 4.9 is where I kind of expect. But I also wasn't on Twitter during the show, so Nate probably has a better sense of just like the trends and everything going on with that.
I doubt that my Twitter is very representative of most of the viewing audience of America, but it was trending pretty much all day. It was trending like at 9 a.m. this morning. I'm gonna do the opposite of what Mike said to keep it interesting. I'm gonna say under 1.5 total, but a remarkable demo number above 0.5 in the demo.
I think they overperform in the demo sometimes when the total viewers aren't as high. But I'm going over on both. I think they're going to go over 1.5 million. I mean, frankly, I think it's going to be around 1.5 million, but I'll go over. And I think they're going to go over 0.5. So let's fucking go, is what I'm saying.
LFG.
LFG. All right, that's the show for this week. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review. And if you want to support the show, the best ways to do so are to go to manscaped.com. Use the promo code THISIS for 20% off and free shipping. Go to mybookie.ag. Use the promo code ELITE to double your deposit. And go to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. For Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.